This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Chronic kidney disease, well, it's a serious condition, and it can lead both to decreased quality of life and even premature death. And it's a growing health problem in the United States, with the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, reporting that almost 17% of all adults above the age of 20, that's one in six individuals, has kidney disease. And here with more on this problem and what can be done about it is Dr. Sriram Narsapur. He's Associate Professor of Medicine and the Division Chief of Nephrology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Narsapur. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you for having me.
So help us understand kidney disease. First, what do the kidneys do for us, and what problems develop in kidney functioning?
So the kidneys do a lot, and they do it very silently. We don't fully appreciate everything they do, but they do have two major roles. One is to manage the body's volume status, and everybody knows about urine output and getting rid of fluid. The other is that they're very important in balancing the body's chemistries. So they help to determine what your sodium or your potassium level is, how much acid or base you have in your blood. And these are all things that you don't feel very directly, but need constant balance so your systems work okay.
So they are a filter for in some ways, for or a regulator of those kinds of entities in the body?
Exactly. They regulate the chemistries. And the third function that I didn't even think about until you just reminded me is that they actually have some hormonal input in determining your vitamin D levels and in producing hormones that help maintain your red blood cell content.
And so they really do a lot. They eliminate waste from the body,
yes.
All the waste. So what are the problems that can occur in kidney functioning?
Early in kidney dysfunction, there's not too much. They're remarkably able to compensate for mild dysfunction. If you had early lung problems, you would notice it right away with shortness of breath. But early kidney problems are pretty much asymptomatic. As time goes on, you start to develop an accumulation of substances that your body shouldn't necessarily have on board. And these are very difficult to detect symptomatically. We can only discover them by laboratory tests. And that's a big impediment to discovering kidney disease.
So it's almost silent in the
exactly
early stages.
Silent. I hate to put it this bluntly, but it is a silent killer.
So what are the major causes for kidney dysfunction? What leads to kidney dysfunction?
The two major causes are diabetes and hypertension. The third major determinant of kidney disease is family history, and that's a little bit easier to identify because people typically know that their families had some kidney problem.
So how does diabetes and high blood pressure lead to problems in the kidney? What do they do to contribute to kidney malfunction?
The end result of both diabetes and hypertension is damage to the small blood vessels, and specifically the lining of the small blood vessels that we call the endothelium. The kidney is composed of millions of tiny little filtering units that are basically delicate small blood vessels. And as years go by with diabetes or hypertension, they just gum up the works and they damage the glomeruli is what we call them.
So that basically these primary diseases create a secondary disease in a sense. You have diabetes or hypertension as a problem, and it leads to this other very
exactly.
serious
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in fact, you may, many listeners may be aware of the fact that diabetes can affect your vision. And much the same thing that happens in your eyes happens in your kidneys. It has to do with the little tiny blood vessels in the background.
So who's most at risk?
There are three groups of people who are most at risk. People with diabetes, people with hypertension.
Excuse me for interrupting you. Is that true of either type 1 or type 2 of diabetes?
Yes. In fact, type 1 diabetes has kind of a predictable course because people know when they develop type 1 diabetes, they need insulin. Type 2 diabetes sneaks up on people, and oftentimes they don't even know they had type 2 diabetes until years and years, and their kidneys have been damaged during that time period. So yes, they both cause kidney problems.
And who else did you say was at risk?
People with hypertension, even mild to moderate hypertension over years can cause a lot of damage. Unfortunately, there are certain groups of people who are particularly susceptible for maybe for genetic reasons, and they often either don't or can't have access to healthcare. And those include young African-American males who might have very high blood pressures when they're 17 or 18, but they don't see a doctor because they don't feel it and they don't routinely go in for routine medical checkups. And unfortunately, that group of people is particularly susceptible to kidney failure.
So hypertension can be a silent killer in a sense as well, is what you're saying, because people would not realize they have it, and yet it's creating all kinds of damage throughout the body.
Throughout the body, and they only discover that they have hypertension maybe when they have a stroke or a heart attack or kidney problems.
You were talking about family history. Help us understand those people in terms of being at risk.
Exactly.
How does it run in families?
The third group after diabetes and hypertension are people who have a family history, either of a congenital kidney condition like polycystic kidneys or a propensity to kidney disease. And that might be some relatively unusual genetic disorder that runs in a family, kidney stones that recur in families, or even things like reflux, where the urine can go back up into the kidney and cause damage. And that's a big problem in children.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with nephrologist Dr. Sriram Narsapur. We're talking about kidney disease. So you're talking about children. I guess the question I have then is kidney disease can occur in children as well as throughout the lifespan.
Yes. So children who get kidney disease are also at risk if they have hypertension. These days, more and more children have diabetes, and we're starting to see kidney disease in children with diabetes. And the other big category is anatomic problems in children, typically something that we call reflux, where the urine in the bladder might go back up into the kidney and cause scarring. Reflux can be silent, but it does manifest with urinary tract infections. So a child with urinary tract infections shouldn't be dismissed as having a simple urinary tract infection. They need to be evaluated.
And clearly, it sounds like a pressing problem, because if it goes undiagnosed in a child, and that can continue for many, many years, you really could have very severe kidney damage.
True, and you only pick those people up when they're 18, 19, or 20.
So what are the stages? I mean, does kidney disease generally develop slowly over time? Is it a very sudden acute kind? I'm kind of answering my own question. I get the feeling it is a slow developing problem over time.
For most people, it's very slow. It's very insidious. It's silent, as you mentioned earlier. For a small percentage of people, they develop kidney failure acutely because they're in the hospital and they have other things like an infection or a big heart attack or shock or something like that. But that's not the bulk of people. It's very slow. And when we stage kidney disease, many people will not be aware that they have stage one or even stage two kidney disease because it doesn't pop up on the radar symptomatically. It takes a lot of kidney injury before you start to develop blood or symptomatic abnormalities.
So when you say that, it strikes me that there should be some recommendations or some way of looking at who should be screened and when they should be screened for kidney disease.
There are recommendations. People with the risk factors, diabetes, hypertension, and a family history, should be screened on a yearly basis. The screening is not particularly complicated. It's a blood test, a urine test, and a blood pressure check. And physicians or healthcare centers can do that very easily.
And that's critical, it sounds to me, based on all the potential problems that can occur if it goes unchecked.
It is. And what we see quite often, unfortunately, what I see very often is referral of patients who have very advanced kidney disease, and there's not that much you can do about it at that point other than renal replacement therapy, which we'll, I'm sure, talk about in a
minute.
Which
is transplant, basically.
And there's two options. One is transplant, which is by far the preferred option, and the other is dialysis. We refer to that as renal replacement therapy. But I have to tell you, dialysis is far from being perfect. It is an imperfect solution to a very complicated problem, and we prefer to get a transplant, but transplants are not that easily come by.
Yeah, and that's been part of the problem nationwide, and even I think worldwide, is finding adequate donors, and both living and deceased.
It is. We've had a huge rise in the incidence of kidney failure because of the epidemic of diabetes and hypertension, partly from obesity, And so the number of people with kidney failure continues to grow at an astronomical rate, as you mentioned in the introduction, but the number of donors and the number of transplants is not changing that much. So we're desperate to find new ways.
So tell me how someone, let's say they're at the end point of, well, first let me just go through this. So you've been determined to have kidney disease, and let's say it's third stage, or what are the stages?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, so if you're at the last stage,
five.
You're on end stage.
Yes.
You absolutely either have to have dialysis on a regular basis or have a transplant. How is it determined? How are people screened for transplant? How do you know that you're a good candidate, for example?
People can actually get transplanted even before they start dialysis. A lot of people don't know that. That's called a preemptive transplant. But your kidney function has to be documented as being fairly bad. It's typically below about 20% kidney function. When you get below about 10 or 15%, you can't wait for a transplant anymore and you have to get dialysis to stay alive. To get evaluated for a transplant, you have to be reasonably healthy, understanding that diabetes and hypertension are almost universal among the population. You have to have a solid cardiac screen, so your heart has to make it through the surgery. You can't have any active ongoing infections or cancers, malignancies. And those are the things that we look for. We screen for other things like issues related to bladder function or GI problems that might interfere with normal absorption of the important anti-rejection medicines. But the main things are making sure that somebody doesn't have cardiac disease and doesn't have active infection or malignancy.
And assuming you can find a match, well, first of all, how is a match found?
The ideal situation is to have a living donor. The ideal living donor is an identical twin, because then you don't have to deal with all the immunologic issues. But most people don't have an identical twin. So a living donor, whether it's a friend or a relative, or sometimes even strangers come forward, an altruistic donor is the ideal match. But not everybody has access to a living donor.
And then you have to be matched on the basis of?
So then you get matched on the basis of your blood type, and specifically related to your what we call HLA type, which is a genetic determinant of your immunology, how your immune system works.
So your immune system will be less apt to reject a particular kidney.
Exactly.
Donor kidney.
Exactly. Despite the fact that we use very strong anti-rejection medicine, there is still that risk of rejection.
And the list, as a result of all of this and all that people have to go through, the list still remains quite long for all the reasons you were saying. The demand is growing and the number of transplanted donors are actually on it, less available as time goes on.
If you don't have a living donor, you get put on the deceased donor list, and then you have to wait for some very generous family to donate their loved one's organs. That list is just exploding. So if you're on the deceased donor list, you might wait for years for a transplant. Depending on your blood type and your HLA type, you might wait for a long time.
Well, it's a grim picture, but we're going to hear a little bit more as we go on with the show about some of the changes within transplantation mm-hmm. that are making it a little bit more available for people to be helped. But I want to thank you. They've given us a broad overview of what we are talking about when we talk about kidney disease. And clearly people who have any of these risk factors really should remember to get themselves screened and find out if there's anything going wrong with their
they
kidneys.
Should get their early intervention is always the important part, and prevention is the mainstay.
And prevention being?
Prevention means a healthy lifestyle, ideal body weight, exercise, watching what you eat, the same things that we all have to do.
Right. Well, I want to thank you once again for coming in. Crucial information. My guest has been Dr. Sriram Narsapur. He's Associate Professor of Medicine and the Division Chief of Nephrology at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.